infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Everyone here is bad. Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I'm your host, Tracy Savage. Let's get this night started off with some tunes.
Children, they're too fat to feed. You're on medication, taking pills to sleep. I think I'm doing just fine compared to what you've been doing. I won't get vaccinated, insurance costs too much. You think you're so persuasive, but I'm not giving up. Saving my life, it's not what you're doing. I won't justify the way I live my life. Cause I know I'm living it, feeling it, tasting it, and you're just wasting your time trying to throw me a line. When you're low and drowning, I like where I'm at. On my back, floating down in my own riptide. The water is fine. I like to step on cracks, I go against the odds. You think my world is flat, do I turn you on? Maybe, yeah, I'm wrong, but I like. Stay. I never read a side. I don't mind if you wait, but I don't waste my time. Crazy, it's just fine, cause I like where I'm going. I won't justify the way I live my life. Cause I'm the one living it, feeling it, tasting it, and you're just wasting your time trying to throw me a line. When you're the one drowning, I like where I'm at. On my back, floating down in my own riptide. The water is fine.
Get started with some science news. Molecules, matter, and energy. Particles have gone surfing. Physicists caught electrons in the act of surfing, not on water, but on hot plasma. German scientists zapped the plasma with a high-intensity laser pulse, then watched as bunches of electrons scooted along a wake left in the plasma by moving electrical charges. The findings, reported online March 13th in Nature Physics, reveal the first time anyone has ever seen such electron surfing in real time. Future studies could lead to better ways of imaging quickly moving atoms and molecules, the scientists say. And atoms never forget. An ensemble of hundreds of spinning atoms arranged like X's and O's on a tic-tac board, described in a new paper in the March 17th issue of Nature, could be a way to store information in a quantum computer. Using a laser and microwaves, a team of scientists at the Max Planck Institute of Quantum Optics in Germany changed the direction of individual rubidium atoms' spins without disturbing their neighbors. Patterns of spin states in multiple atoms corresponding to the O's and the 1's, that would be zeros and the 1's, in a traditional computer could be created and imaged using fluorescence. And under pressure, scientists are. They found a new mineral rich in carbon, iron, and magnesium that possibly exists naturally in the deep earth. When the French researchers ground up and squeezed carbonate rocks, the new material appeared at pressures equivalent to depths of 1,800 kilometers. Unusually, it sports rings of pyramids made out of carbon and oxygen atoms. The team reports this in a paper to appear in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And in Earth and Environment news, tar balls in the sky, the burning of trees, crop residues, and other types of biomass can spew huge quantities of soot and other carbonaceous pollutants, including nano-sized tar balls. Researchers at Arizona State University in Tempe now find that these tar balls have almost the same light-absorbing and air-warming capacity as soot, and the quantity of tar balls present in biomass smoke plumes can be roughly double that of soot. Owing to tar balls' potency and the huge quantities of biomass burned globally, climate warming computer programs should start taking these pollutants into account. The authors recommended this online in the March 8th issue of the Journal of Geophysical Research. And listen to a faraway volcano. Yes, I'm going to have to say the name again. Iceland's infamous. Can I say it? Eyjafjallajökull. I'm going to say it again. Eyjafjallajökull. I think I got it. Eyjafjallajökull. Eyjafjallajökull? Okay, I think I did it. I'm never going to say that again. Okay, I said that the last time. I wasn't going to say it again. And I said it again a couple times. Probably wrong. But that volcano that we're all talking about didn't just shut down Europeans' airspace last spring. It also sent low-frequency vibrations ringing through the atmosphere as far away as Tunisia. 14 stations set up to detect infrasound vibrations for the purposes of monitoring atmospheric nuclear tests also picked up signals from the April to May 2010 eruption of the volcano. An international team of scientists reported this in geophysical research letters. Even modest-sized volcanic eruptions can thus be detected from far away, and infrasound detectors could complement traditional volcanic monitoring. That's pretty darn cool. And non-stick hemoglobin? Let's take a look at this. A new study finds signs of potential toxicity in a common pollutant, perfluorodecanic acid, a breakdown product of stain-proof and grease-proof coatings on consumer goods and food packaging. In test tube studies, PFDA disrupted the structure of hemoglobin and myoglobin, the oxygen-carrying proteins in blood and muscle. Researchers at China's Shandong University found this out just recently. The PFDA-induced structural changes should render the proteins less able to bind oxygen, the scientists observed. In contrast, smaller related perfluorinated compounds such as PFOA had little effect on the proteins, and the scientists reported this online March 10th issue of Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. Superfund improves infant health. Well, university scientists claim that they have the first evidence that cleanups of Superfund sites protect babies in the womb. A March working paper issued by the National Bureau of Economic Research, researchers compared the health of more than 620,000 infants born to families near these hazardous sites. Birth defects, which typically occur early in pregnancy, fell 20 to 25% in the 5 years after cleanups compared with the 5 years before cleanups started, especially among families living within 2,000 meters of Superfund sites. Infant mortality data suggests cleanups of the 51 most toxic sites allowed more than 323 additional babies to survive. Good news. And bottoms up in the Arctic, 1/4 of the places containing frozen methane on the Arctic Ocean seafloor may warm substantially in the coming century, a new study suggests. Using computer simulations of the Arctic's future, German and French researchers found that the greatest warming will occur in shallow regions where the warm water enters from the Atlantic. Now, if these areas start to warm up, heat-trapping methane could bubble to the surface and add effects of global warming, and the scientists reported this in an upcoming issue of Geophysical Research Letters. Look out for that one. That's got an awful lot of stuff coming in it. And speaking of some human news here, goal-oriented newborns. Newborn babies aren't just bundles of reflexes within 2 days of birth. Infants pay special attention to adults' simple goal-oriented actions, say psychologist Leila Craghiero of the University of Ferrara in Italy and her colleagues. Newborns look longer at a video of a hand reaching out to grasp a big blue ball than at video showing a hand grasping the ball and then moving away from it, or a hand reaching out to grasp air. The researchers reported this in Cognition. This finding is consistent with previous ultrasound evidence suggesting that fetuses intentionally touch their own mouths and eyes, the scientists say. And Stone Age Stick'em? We just had a sticky report on hemoglobins. Let's take a look at this. People living in what's now Western Germany affix stone tools to wooden handles with a sticky substance made out of birch bark by around, 120,000 years ago, and a team led by archaeologist Alfred Pollack of the University of the Philippines in Quezon City reported this. A microscopic and chemical analysis described the researchers in an upcoming issue of Journal of Archaeological Science, and they identified birch pitch residue on the attachment ends of 39 stone implements from a Stone Age camp. Heating of birch bark in small pits to produce an adhesive remained much the same in European cultures until several thousand years ago, the scientists say. And attention, men on the make. Happy guys, no lookers. Look proud, not happy. Women find facial expression of pride to be especially attractive on guys, whereas happy male faces prove much less alluring, say psychologists Jessica Tracy and Alec Beale of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. In contrast, men find happy female faces far more appealing than those of women who look proud. The researchers reported this in an upcoming Emotion. So after studying face ratings made by more than 1,000 volunteers, Tracy and Beale suggest that men should opt for pride over pleasantness when, say, posing photos of themselves on online dating sites. Well, you know, it's all about the urge to merge. Evolution. And not so abstract art, really. People who scoff that a child could have painted a splotchy abstract piece of modern art see more in such creations than they realize. When forced to choose a favorite between a painting by a child, chimp, or other animal and one by an abstract expressionist artist, people untrained in art usually pick the professional's creation, even if it was mislabeled as that of a child or a non-human animal, say psychologist Angelina Holly Dolan of Boston College and Ellen Winter of Harvard University. People intuitively discern goals or intentions in artists' abstract paintings, and the researchers proposed this in an upcoming issue of Psychological Science. I'm going to check that out because it is the biggest joke every time you see one and you're not an art professional and you say, you know what, a kindergartner can have done that. Well, apparently a kindergartner might be able to do that, but more than likely you're going to intrinsically know the difference. So very interesting study. I'm going to check that out. And now I think it's about time for another little music break.
Thank you.
Speaking of babies and ancient humans, here's a story with a little bit of both. Neanderthals' brain development created a divergent evolutionary path. Now, brains of newborn human babies and Neanderthals who became extinct about 28,000 years ago were about the same size and appear almost identical at first. But after birth, and particularly during the first year of life, the differences in development are stark, said Philip Gunz of the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Germany. There was a huge difference in the way that they grew their brain compared to modern humans in the first 1.5 and 2 years, Gunz said. These findings shed light on how our closest extinct relatives may have thought differently than us and reveal details about the evolution of our brain. To compare the two brains, scientists assembled a virtual Neanderthal brain by scanning skull fragments and comparing the computer models at different stages of growth to the human baby brain. The human brain began much more activity in the neural circuitry in the first year of life, which may have helped early Homo sapiens survive in the process of natural selection, the study said. Now, the brains of adult Neanderthals were a different shape than ours. Theirs were less globular and more elongated, and that was the norm for more than 2 million years of human evolution, as is seen in chimpanzees as well. The interesting thing is within modern humans, the size of the brain correlates only very weakly with any measure of intelligence, he said. It's more the internal structure of the brain that is important. And the Neanderthal, they were smart because they had a huge brain, but we think that the internal structures must have been different because they grew differently, so we don't think the Neanderthal saw the world as we do. Neanderthals are believed to be modern humans' closest ancestor, and some scientists view both as the same species. Yes, there's a huge controversy over this. A recent landmark genome analysis determined that humans most likely interbred with Neanderthals, and we reported that right here on the show, and that as much as 4% of the modern genome, human genome, seems to be from Neanderthals. A team at the University of Chicago reported that at least one gene called microcephalin involved in regulating our brain growth, although the gene's precise role is really not known at this time, and they're doing studies on it, may have passed from the Neanderthal to ours. Analyzing the gene from 89 people from around the world, the scientists discovered that a particular variant of the gene called haplogroup D, present in 70% of the world's population, appeared in modern humans around 37,000 years ago and seemed to have been favored by natural selection, quickly spreading inside human populations. Haplogroup D differed in so many bases from other variants of microcephalin that the geneticist estimated through statistical tests an age of a little more than 1 million years ago, long before Homo sapiens even appeared. The team guessed that most likely prehistoric modern humans interbred with now extinct hominid that carried haplogroup D, like most likely the Neanderthals. Now, the haplogroup was probably beneficial enough to spread quickly in modern humans, says Bruce Lahn, a member of that same research team. Neanderthals must have not as cognitively been advanced as modern humans, and the researchers suppose that this gene variant might have conferred modern humans a better adaptation to Eurasian environments that Neanderthals had occupied long before the arrival of Homo sapiens, and we have this confirmed now. This study is the most compelling case to date for genetic contribution of Neanderthals to modern humans, and this was said by ancient DNA researcher Svante Paabo of the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig, Germany, also, who is going to search for the haplogroup D in his own studies of the Neanderthal genome. So cool. If you want to know more about this, go on the livescience.com page.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Ha ha ha, the Borg, science fiction or science fact? New science suggests that we might soon be able to mix computers and neurons. From physorg.com, graduate students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, led by Menroy Yu, have published in an ACS Nano paper, Semiconductor Nanomembrane Tubes, Three-Dimensional Confinement for Controlled Neurite Outgrowth. That was the title, in which they show that they have been able to successfully coax nerve cell tendrils to grow through tiny tubes made of the semiconductor materials silicon and germanium. While this groundbreaking research may not bring the cyborgs on or even human brains enmeshed with computer parts, it does open the door to the possibility of regenerating nerve cells damaged due to disease or injury, which is very cool. You and his team, led by Justin Williams, a biomedical engineer, created tubes of varying sizes and shapes, small enough for a nerve cell to glam onto, but not so big that it could fit all the way inside. The tubes were then coated with nerve cells from mice, and then watched to see how they would react. Instead of sitting idly, the nerve cells began to send tendrils through the tunnels as if searching for a path to something or somewhere else. In some instances, they actually followed the contours of the tubes, which means in theory that the nerves could be grown into structures. Scientists have known for a while that nerve cells have a seek feature, but aren't sure yet what it is that they're seeking or if it's just a random thing that they do. By setting up nerve cells to follow pre-planned paths through tiny tubes, the research team hopes to find the answer to that by installing listening devices to record electrical emissions from nerves, which could, in theory, lead to recorded conversations between nerve cells. Now, the hope, of course, in this type of research is that a way can be found to connect a computer to some sort of group of nerve cells to reestablish communication that has been disrupted. The computer in this case would serve as a relay of sorts, allowing those who can no longer walk, for example, due to spinal injury or disease, regain their former abilities. In that regard, this particular research is even more revealing than it might at first seem. Now, due to the fact that the tiny tubes have been created very closely resemble myelin, the outer insulating sheath covers part of normal nerve cells, and you can find out more about this. The name of that paper was Semiconductor Nanomembrane Tubes, Three-Dimensional Confinement for Controlled Neurite Outgrowth, and you can find that in the ACS Nano. Are you a Martian? We all could be scientists, eh? And an MIT-developed instrument might someday provide the proof. And by David Chandler at the MIT News Office on MIT.edu, he wrote a very, very interesting take on this. Are we all Martians? Well, according to many planetary scientists, it's conceivable that all life on Earth is descended from organisms that originated on Mars and were carried here aboard meteorites. Now, if that's the case, an instrument being developed by researchers at MIT and Harvard could provide the clinching evidence. Ooh. In order to detect signs of past or present life on Mars, it is in fact true that we're related. Then a promising strategy would be to search for DNA or RNA, and specifically for particular sequences of these molecules that are nearly universal in all forms of terrestrial life that we know of course. That is the strategy being pursued by MIT research scientist Christopher Carr and postdoctoral associate Clarissa Liu, working with Maria Zuber, head of MIT's Department of Earth, Atmospheric and Planetary Sciences, also known as EAPS, E-A-P-S, and Gary Rivkin, a molecular biologist at the Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard University, who came up with the instrument concept and put together the initial team. Liu presented a summary of their proposed instrument called the Search for Extraterrestrial Genomes, also known as SETG, at the IEEE Aerospace Conference this month in Big Sky, Montana. Now, the idea is based on several facts that have now been well established. First, in the early days of the solar system, the climates on Mars and Earth were much more similar than they are now, so life that took hold on one planet could presumably have survived on the other. Second, an estimated 1 billion tons of rock have traveled from Mars to Earth, blasted loose by asteroid impacts, and then traveling through interplanetary space before striking Earth's surface. Third, microbes have been shown to be capable of surviving the initial shock of such an impact, and there is some evidence that they could also survive the thousands of years of transit through space before arriving at another planet. So the various steps needed for life to have started on one planet and spread to another are all plausible. Additionally, orbital dynamics show that it's about 100 times easier for the rocks to travel from Mars to Earth than the other way. So if life got started there first, microbes would have been carried here, and we might all be its descendants. Hoo-hoo. So what? All right? If we are descendants from Mars, there might be important lessons to be learned about our own biological origins by studying biochemistry on our neighbor planet, where biological traces erased long ago here on Earth might have been preserved in the Martian deep freeze. The MIT researchers' device would take samples of Martian soil and isolate any living microbes that might be present, or microbial remnants, which can be preserved for about up to 1 million years and can still contain viable DNA, and separate out the genetic material in order to use standard biochemical techniques to analyze their genetic sequences. It's a long shot, Carr concedes, but if we go to Mars and find life that's related to us, we could have originated on Mars. Or if it started here, it could have been transferred to Mars. Either way, we could be related to life on Mars. So, we should at least be looking for life on Mars that's related to us. Well, that makes sense. Now, even a few years ago, that might have seemed like more of a long shot, but recent Mars orbiter and rover missions have clearly shown that Mars once had abundant water and many of the conditions thought to be needed to support life. And although the surface of Mars today is too cold and dry to support known life forms, there's evidence that liquid water may exist not far below the surface. On Mars today, the best place to look for life is in the subsurface, Carr says. Now, the team has been developing a device that could take a sample of Martian soil from below the surface, perhaps dredged up by a rover equipped with a deep drill, and process it to separate out any possible organisms, amplify their DNA or RNA using the same techniques used for forensic DNA testing on Earth, and then use biochemical markers to search for signs of particular genetic sequences that are nearly universal among all known life forms. The researchers estimate that it could take 2 more years to complete the design and testing of a prototype SETG device. Now, although the proposed device has not yet been selected for any upcoming Mars mission, a future mission with a lander or rover equipped with a drill could potentially carry this life detection instrument. No instrument has been sent to Mars specifically to look for evidence of life since NASA's twin Viking landers in 1976, which produced tantalizing but ambiguous results, and they're still arguing over that. An instrument on the Mars Science Lander to be launched in the fall will investigate chemistry relevant to life. The instrument from the MIT Harvard team directly addresses Earth-like molecular biology. Christopher McKay, an astrobiologist at NASA Ames Research Center in California, who specializes in research related to the possibility of life on Mars, says this work is very interesting and important. He also says it is not implausible that life on Mars will be related to life on Earth and therefore share a common genetics. In any case, it would be important to test this hypothesis. But he adds there is another motive for doing this research as well. From an astronaut health and safety point of view, and from a return sample point of view, there's more to worry about. If there are organisms closely related to us on Mars, since a microbe that is similar is much more likely to be infectious to terrestrial life forms, than a totally alien microbe would be. It's very important to be able to detect such life forms if they are present on Mars. In addition, this method could also detect any biological contamination on Mars that has been brought by spacecraft from Earth. Now, this kind of test is something we have the ability to do, he says, and therefore, although such an experiment has not yet formally been approved, it seems improbable to me, quote, that we will do a serious search for life on Mars and not do this test. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And if you want to know more, you can go to web.mit.edu and check it out. And now fasten your seatbelts because we're going to take a trip into Dimension X, the pebble from the sky.
Adventures in time and space, transcribed in future tense.
Dimension X.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, bring you Dimension X. The civilization of the galaxy spread across 200 million worlds. The black void of space swarmed with the ships of the Empire. But far off the trade routes, almost forgotten, lay the dying planet Earth. A backwater in galactic culture, a place of exile, a pebble in the sky.
I landed on Earth, on the one spot which I would have called civilized. A patch along the desolate heights of the Himalayas that surrounded the palace of the Imperial Governor of Earth.
Dr. Bel Avedan of Sirius Sector. That's a familiar name.
Perhaps you've seen it in the Galactic Archaeological Journal, my Lord Ennis.
Me? No, no, I'm a soldier, not a scientist. It was a newspaper article. You gave an interview about your expedition to Earth. I suppose you'll want to start digging. Whatever can you find on this miserable heap of rubble?
I don't consider Earth a miserable heap, my lord. It's absolutely unique in the galaxy.
Unique?
It's the only inhabited planet that is radioactive.
It's a pig pen.
Yes, I know. But this planet is inhabited. Biologists have proven that on a radioactive world, high forms of life cannot develop.
High forms? The rest of the galaxy hates the Earthmen, and they return it with interest.
I don't think you understand. I'm not intolerant of anyone. And that even includes Earthmen. My theory is that life on Earth originated before it was radioactive.
Ah, there's a story like that in the Earth lore of the ancients.
I know, I've read it.
Oh? I wouldn't admit that here if I were you, Dr. Avedan. It's forbidden for outsiders to read it. The Earthmen get pretty violent about their religion.
Do you mean the Imperial police power here is defective?
It is, in case of sacrilege. Well, now, what do you actually want to prove?
That man originated in prehistoric times on Earth before space travel and spread to the other planets.
What? Are you seriously suggesting that at one time Earth was the only inhabited planet and that man descended from Earthmen?
There's a chance it might be so.
You'll change your mind when you see them, Doctor. I'm not an anti-terrestrial, but as far as I can see, they're lazy and ignorant and generally inferior to us. I'm as liberal as the next man, but it's a fact. Once an Earthman, always an Earthman.
I booked passage to the city of Chica on an Earthline. My fellow passengers seemed ordinary enough, but I was conscious of being alone among Earthmen. I beg your pardon. Could you tell me what's going on there?
Sure. You see that couple? They've been married 40 years. It's their anniversary.
Yes, sir. 40 years. Hey, Mother? It seems like yesterday. Just like yesterday.
Hey, when are you folks scheduled for the 60th?
In a month. 16th of November.
Well, I hope you have a nice day for it. My father reached his 60 in a pouring rain. Kept complaining we were getting soaked. So I told him, what are you complaining about, Dad? I've got to come back.
Now, this 60 they're talking about, are they referring to their 60th birthday?
Sure. That's when they put you away. Euthanasia. It's a custom. Can't have people living on. Eats up all the food. That's right, isn't it, Pop?
Yes, sir. Mother's coming with me when I reach the 60. She's not due for a couple of months, but she thinks we might as well go together.
Yeah, that's the spirit. There's many a man living past the 60. Sneaks, stealing the food from the next generation. A guy should go when it's his time.
Yes, but suppose
it's only fair to... Hey, where are you from?
I beg your pardon?
Asking all them questions.
Yes. Who are you? A spy? Where are you from?
I'm Bel Abaddon, from Baron, Sirius Sector.
Oh, an outsider, huh?
Come on, we go forward. Did you hear that, Mother? An outsider.
I burned with indignation. Earthmen treating me like an outcast. Earthmen. When we landed, I followed my intention of observing the human animal, subspecies Earth, in its native habitat. In this case, a large department store. Perhaps I resembled a floor walker, for a young Earth girl came up to me and asked a question.
Pardon me, but it is my father. He's about 5'4". He wears eye lenses. I think he had on a brown coat.
I'm afraid I don't remember seeing anyone.
But they followed me here. I've got to find him.
Are you in trouble, miss?
No. No, it's nothing, really. I'm sorry I bothered you.
Attention. Attention, please.
What's that?
All patrons of the store will kindly leave by the 5th Street exit. This store is being evacuated for radiation fever quarantine.
What's all this about?
They're after me. It isn't really radiation fever at all.
Who's after you?
How am I going to get out of here? They'll be checking registration cards at the door.
Haven't you got one?
Yes, but it has my name on it. I don't know what to do.
Come on.
But you don't even know me.
I don't know anybody here. But you're an interesting species. Person. This way.
Show your own car. Come on, step along.
Step along.
Next. Check. Wait a minute. Call the check?
Yes, sir.
Stand right there.
Look here, officer.
Are you with her?
Yes, but you'd better find out who I am.
Later. Stand over there. Next. Come on. There you are.
What is it now?
The interior.
Are you afraid of them?
Of course.
Don't worry about the outsiders, Miss Schecht. I'll handle them.
Oh, no, don't try anything. Don't talk to them at all. Just do what they say. Don't even look at them.
We'll see. Here they are.
All right, now. You, guard.
Yes, sir?
I'm Lieutenant Cloudy, Imperial Garrison. Who's got the key?
If it please, Your Honor.
Not so close, idiot. You might be infected. I'll take over. You, Worthy. What's your name? Speak up, squaw.
Paula Schecht, sir.
Your registration papers?
Here you are, sir.
Thank you. All right, now. Pick them up. Go on.
Say, look here now.
What did you say, Earthy?
If you please, sir. This man has nothing to do with me. I never saw him before.
What did you say?
I don't like the way you treat women. And I'd advise you to improve your manners.
And where have you been brought up, Earthy? Here's lesson number one.
Why, you...
My arm! Let go! Sergeant, the Neuronic Whip!
Oh, no, no!
Yes, sir.
You're all right now.
Oh. What happened?
They gave you full power and the neuronic whip.
Where are we?
The military base. Oh, you should.
Is that...
Oh.
Well, Dr. Avedon, we seem to have had an unpleasant contretemps in this city this afternoon.
Unpleasant? I should put it stronger, Colonel. As a free citizen of the Empire, I had every right to resent such illegal treatment.
I consider the whole incident unfortunate, Doctor. Don't you think it would be best to forget the whole matter?
I think not. I have an appointment in a week with the procurator.
Procurator, huh?
What do you intend doing with Miss Schecht?
What would you suggest, sir? I had...
Free her immediately. And offer her your apologies.
Of course. If the young lady will accept my sincere regrets, I will give the order for your release immediately.
Turned us loose.
Of course.
You must be very important. I never heard of the outsiders being that polite to an Earthman before.
I'm not an Earthman, Paula.
What?
I'm an archaeologist from the outside.
Oh. Well, then you stood up to the soldiers because you knew it was safe all along. And I thought... Oh, I should have known.
Paula, does my not being an Earthman make me any difference? From 5 minutes ago?
You might have told me, sir.
You don't mind. Don't call me, sir. Don't be like the rest of them.
Like the rest of whom, sir? The rest of the disgusting animals that live on Earth?
Please,
Paula. If you'll excuse me, sir, I must leave.
Now, wait. Paula! Listen to me, Paula! I had access to the garrison files, and to satisfy idle curiosity, I indexed Paula Schecht. Her father was a Dr. Mikhail Schecht, biologist, and against his name was a black star with a notation, condemned in absentia. Charge, evading the 60. That was why she was afraid. So I sent a note asking her to meet me in the North Park after dark.
Over here.
Dr. Avedon?
Sit down.
Oh, I want you to understand. I wouldn't have come except...
I understand. I've seen your father's record.
You know about it.
I looked into it, Paula. There doesn't seem to be much that can be done about the 60.
Oh, it isn't that. It's not for my father. It's for the whole galaxy.
What is it?
Earth is going to revolt.
No, All of it?
Oh, don't laugh at
me. All of it. The galaxy has a volume of several million cubic light years. It contains 200 million inhabited planets. Earth has a population of only 20 million. And no resources. What can Earth do?
I don't know, Doctor, but my father does. He's told me that Earth knows a way by which it can wipe out all outside life and... Wait.
Hmm?
Someone coming. Park Patrol. Quick, kiss me.
Hmm?
Don't be stupid. Kiss me. They won't suspect anything.
Oh, yes, of course.
They've gone. It's all right. Now come with me. I'll take you to my father.
Dr. Avedon, this is a pleasure. I have read your articles in the journal. It is hard to get copies. Our neighbors don't care to trade with Earth. It's part of the nearly insoluble problem of anti-terrestrialism.
No one seems to want a solution. Earthmen and outsiders alike?
Oh, no, that is not true. There is a way of preserving our culture and living as equals in a larger society. But the zealots don't think so.
The zealots?
Yes. They rule Earth now. They are a small minority, but they have power. They have plans.
They planned the revolt, Paula told me?
Yes.
I see. Well, why didn't you report this to the Imperial Garrison?
The Society of Earth Ancients have guarded me too well. Besides, they had a hold on me. I am 62. You know the customs of Earth.
The 60 years.
They allowed me to live on. The price was silence about the weapon.
You agreed to this?
I wanted to live.
What is this weapon?
You are aware of Earth's peculiar environment, the radioactivity?
Yes.
Over the years, we Earthmen have built up certain immunities to radiation burns, for one.
But it's a minute difference. I measured it experimentally.
Oh, but, Doctor, human life is not the only form affected by radiation and mutation. There is microscopic life, bacteria, viruses. We have been searching out such a virus, one to which Earthmen have developed a high degree of immunity, but not outsiders.
You mean a particular disease?
Yes. Common fever. It is a mild children's disease here, like chickenpox or German measles. But to outsiders, it is radiation fever. Symptoms develop in 2 hours. Lips are so badly affected that the victim cannot talk. And in 2 days, he dies.
They've isolated this virus?
Tons of it in crystalline form.
And they plan to let this loose in the galaxy?
By means of guided missiles. Then... frightened refugees will carry the disease across space. Billions will die.
You're sure about this? You have proof?
I worked on the project.
We've got to get to the procurator. I can catch the evening train.
Who is it? I don't know.
Open up.
There should have been an alarm.
I've got to get out. Is there a back
entrance?
Open up
there.
Don't move. Hands in front of you.
What's the meaning of this? I demand...
Shut up!
I'm a galactic citizen. You've got no right to detain me without legal authority.
I am an Earthman, but I think you'll find I am all the authority needed at this moment, Dr. Avedon. I am Balkas, the High Minister of Earth.
The High Minister? What are you doing?
I always look after distinguished visitors personally.
Avedon does not know anything.
I doubt that, Dr. Schecht. We'll proceed now to the Hall of Correction.
You can't do this. When the procurator...
The procurator will hear nothing until it is too late. The guided missiles will be fired tonight at 12. Guard, if they make a false move...
Keep them covered, guard.
Right.
Paula, can you scream?
Okay.
There, coming down the street. Imperial Patrol.
Oh, it's no use.
Do what I say. Scream. Go ahead.
Stop! The way
you
there!
Hold it. They're outsiders. You're right. That's the Imperial Patrol.
All right, Earthing. What's going on here?
Good morning, Sergeant.
Sir? Earthing?
You don't understand. I'm Balkas, the Lord High Minister of Earth.
Listen, Earthy, I don't care who you are. What's going on?
Yes, sir. We've arrested these people.
What charge?
Blasphemy.
Hmm. All right, get moving.
Thank you.
Sergeant.
What do you want, Earthy?
I'm a galactic citizen. I demand the right...
You? May we proceed, sir?
Listen, Sergeant. I've something more to say to you.
What?
This.
No Earthy is going to get away with this.
Get a squad car!
But, Sergeant, I'm the Lord Minister of Earth.
Tell him about it at the Imperial Barracks. Now move, all of you, before I give you a shot of the whip.
I tell you, I'm a citizen of the Empire.
Listen.
I can prove it. You'll get into a lot of trouble if you don't believe me.
I'll admit no Earthy would dare spit in my face.
It was the only way I could get to the garrison. I insist on seeing the officer of the day.
I sent for him. You better have a good story. Attention!
That is. Which one of you claims he's a citizen of the Empire?
I am.
Garrett's the one from the store.
You, eh? The smart louse that broke my arm. Well, well, well.
I've got to see the colonel, Lieutenant.
Now, Dr. Avedan, I could hardly do that unless it's important.
It is important. It's life and death for the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Come here. Closer. Oh, it's too bad I've got to save you for the colonel.
What?
He'll see you at 5:30, his orders.
You knew all along.
Sure. Come on, Earthy lover.
We're afraid you're in serious trouble, Dr. Avedan. The man you're accusing is the High Minister for Earth.
I know, but I have proof.
Well?
I can only speak to the Procurator. You've got to contact him.
There are channels, Dr. Avedan.
We haven't time for channels. I have the details of the plot from Dr. Schecht. You've got to let me speak to the Procurator.
I've already advised him of your arrest. He's flying in. You had better be able to prove what you say. If you don't, we'll have to hand you back to the native authorities. And their courts are notoriously savage.
Well, Avedan, I've called you here with His Excellency, the High Minister for Earth.
My lord, this man is behind the whole plot.
Is he?
There's no time to lose. I've explained to you about the virus. They're shooting off the guided missiles at 12. You've got to take action.
Well, Your Excellency... My lord, if this man has any evidence...
You admitted it this afternoon.
Well, you have no witness to that.
Ask Dr. Schecht. He worked on the virus.
I wouldn't say that Schecht lied, my lord, but he is a criminal wanted for evading the 60, and some men will invent any story to avoid death.
The deadline is midnight. You've got to bomb those temples where the launching sites are.
Perhaps I can explain. According to my information, Dr. Avedan seems to have succumbed to a certain Earth girl, the daughter of the unfortunate Dr. Schecht. Is this true, Avedan?
What has that got to do with it? There isn't any time. You've got to do...
Dr. Avedan, are you in love with that girl?
Yes, yes. Will you listen to
me? I don't think we need pursue this any further. Your Excellency, I shall order you released with an apology.
No.
Dr. Avedan, I can hardly believe a degenerate who fraternizes with Earth women.
You scum, you pot-bellied scum.
I warn you, Avedan, you're in trouble enough.
I'm in trouble. You fool, you stupid, blind, bigoted fool. You're destroying the galaxy. You're murdering them all. But before I die, I'll have the pleasure of smashing your fat, oily face in the...
Let me go. Guard! Get the whip! Oh. Oh.
Belle, are you all right?
Oh. What time is it?
1:30. Past the deadline. It's all over. Lord Ennius released the High Minister with an apology.
Doesn't matter. The Empire can wipe Earth out. It won't save any lives. The virus must have been spread here, too. Earthmen are immune, but outsiders...
Belle, you're an outsider.
Yes.
Oh.
I am. We're paying, Paula. The rest of us. Paying for centuries of intolerance.
Oh, Belle.
Look out there. through the bars. The night sky. Pinpoints of light. The Empire. Doomed.
Oh, Bill. Bill, don't.
I was just thinking. I came to Earth to prove a theory that man started here. That once in prehistoric times, Earth was the only populated world of the galaxy. It's funny. Now it will be that way again. Man living only on Earth. He'll forget the science, the machinery of the Empire. He'll forget the stars. And there will be only Earth, alone in the universe. A pebble in the sky.
The children of tomorrow will play with toys. But what will those toys be like? An ordinary clerk in an ordinary job finds a terrifying answer to that question next week as Dimension X brings you Child's Play. Dimension X is transcribed each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X has presented Pebble in the Sky, dramatized for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Santos Ortega as Aberdon and Susan Douglas as Pola. Your host was Norman Rose, music by Bert Berman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Edward King.
Science fiction or science fact? You decide. Well, that's about all time we have for this week. For Savage Science, I'd like to thank Nick Palucco for the great show graphics, Dennis Bond for his fantastic intro that I use every week, and his company, Hawk Productions, and Waleed Al-Haddad, who helps me find some of these great stories that I bring to you, and my illustrious executive producer, Todd Sheets, from Jackalope 105 FM. If you weren't familiar with him, he's fantastic. And I'd like to say, keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails until next we meet again.